Ramin Mazahir is with us and brings us more about this demonstration. Well, Ramin, fill us in on the latest and overall the government's response to the situation.
This was the third Saturday of protests, and from the very beginning, there was violence, and the violence continued throughout the day. The final total is 400 people were arrested. More than 130 were injured, including 23 members of the security forces. But it's not only in Paris. There were 60 protesters injured in Toulouse, and there was violence in other cities. And it was also not just in Paris at the Champs-Élysées, but in multiple areas of downtown, the tourist part of Paris. 190 fires were set alight, including six buildings. The total damages are expected to be over hundreds of millions of euros. Macron is holding a crisis meeting today, but he has already indicated that he is taking a total hard line. He said, his government said rather contradictorily, that while they are open to dialogue, they will not change course. However, 8 out of 10 French people approve of the actions of the Yellow Jackets, and minor protests have continued today. You know, there was a toll booth which was set on fire, and there were road blockages. The spark has been more taxes on diesel gasoline. France's auto industry made a failed debt on diesel to the point where 80% of French passenger cars run on diesel gasoline. So this is something that affects, you know, 4 out of 5 households which own a car. It is being called the worst unrest the capital has seen since 1968. That's somewhat debatable. But analysts say that we should not look at this in isolation as one particular incident, but look at it in a continuum. And when we do that, that allows us to see that this is yet another anti-austerity protest, which started back in 2011.
Let's welcome our guest to the program. Out of London, investigative journalist Tony Goslin, and out of New York, Professor of Comparative Politics, William Paterson University, John Mason. Thank you both for being with us. And as you've just heard, our correspondent there out of Paris, Ramin Mazahir, and I thank him for that, filling us in the latest situation. Let's start this off with John. Now, the French government is calling Saturday's clashes the worst riots in Paris in 50 years. Your assessment of that, do you agree with that?
I think the comparison of May 68, which is being made even by some of the Yellow Jackets themselves, may be a bit of a stretch. 68 lasted for a month. And most importantly, in 1968, there was a massive general strike by the largest French trade unions. And so far, if we look at these demonstrations, the trade unions are largely absent. I think what we can say is that over the last, since Macron came into power in spring of 2017, we have seen a number of these kinds of flare-ups. Last May, it was university students and faculty all around France, but also in Paris, who were being cleared out, for instance, from the University of Paris Nanterre by the CRS and the law enforcement officers. So I think what is true is that it all throughout modern French history, there are moments of what we might call these great days, these Jacqueries, where the little people, right, the lower middle classes and working classes have had enough, and you get this outbreak of violence. We've seen it also in, you know, the last 25, 30 years. Every time there's been a push from the top to impose neoliberal reforms, we have seen sort of day-long strikes by subway workers. We've seen demonstrations by farmers. So this action, to some degree, fits that pattern.
Okay.
I think it's more true outside of Paris than what happened inside downtown Paris, which is another story entirely.
All right. Well, Tony, your take. I mean, as our guests in New York just said, I mean, demonstrations do happen often enough in France, but what do you think has made this protest somewhat different, especially when we look at how it wound up with so much clashing and violence yesterday, and it seemed like security forces were unable to control the situation?
Well, my prediction is the security forces will continue to find it unable to control the situation. until they start to put money back in people's pockets in France. What the French people voted for last year, when they voted for Macron, was someone who they thought was going to be able to control the finances of France better, stand up perhaps to the European Central Bank, and make the euro work for the French people, which it's not working. Essentially, though, when they voted for Macron, what they really got was an agent, an employee of the Rothschild Bank. This is the problem with Macron, is he worked from 2008 until 2012 for David de Rothschild, and then he became an economics minister under Hollande. But if you have a look at how the French presidential elections are financed, it's actually rather similar to the US elections. In other words, massive amounts of money can get behind one candidate. This is how Macron managed to win after coming from absolutely nowhere. He wasn't part of any of the traditional large French parties. The finances were revealed actually by WikiLeaks last year as to where the money had come from for Macron to finance his election campaign. 2.5 million euros from George Soros, 2 million euros from Goldman Sachs, and David the Rothschild gave 1 million euros apparently to his election campaign. So you can see actually what's happening is that an oligarchy which puts massive amounts of money way beyond the realms of not only ordinary people but many of the political existing political parties can't afford this sort of money. He's the guy who's the representative of the international financial system, the bankers, and Paris was one of the main places which was set up in 1800 by Mayor Amschel Rothschild. Frankfurt, Paris, London, Vienna and Naples was where he sent his four sons, and ever since then the Rothschild bankers have been getting the European powers into debt, which is what they're trying to do, and they're now getting the ordinary people into debt too.
Well, John, I mean, the French people are feeling increasingly under pressure as their pay is not keeping up with the cost of living. Dissatisfaction, of course, continues to increase. It's been going on for years. I mean, why are we witnessing this continual decline in the quality of life? If we look at, for example, there are other countries, perhaps like the one I'm sitting in Iran, that's under sanctions. Of course, France does not have that type of problem, nor do they have a war at its borders. I mean, what is the bulk of the problem that why they cannot sustain a higher quality of living for its people?
Well, I think what we're looking at is a pattern that's being repeated in a great many of the old core industrial societies, whether we're talking about France, United Kingdom, or even the United States. That is to say that much of the wealth, much of the increased income, is being redistributed toward the top 10 and 20%, though I don't think that France has gone as far in that direction as you might say either the United States or the United Kingdom. So what we're seeing in our politics in many places is this kind of social fracture, this cultural divide between the greatest global cities and their surrounding suburbs. And then the hinterland. You can see that in the vote, the 2017 vote for the French presidential election. Marine Le Pen's then National Front and now Rassemblement National was strongest in the south and in the east, in areas which were relatively unpopulated or had low population densities, that had high levels of unemployment, and where the economy, the old industrial economy, has been gradually being eliminated over the last 30 years. Macron's strength was in the big cities, which are kind of where the new information economy and so forth and so on and service economy is concentrated. What I would add is, though, if you look at that election, there's a very high level of abstention. So part of the problem that we're seeing here, and I agree with your guest to some degree, that Macron is a product of the French technocratic education system. And in many respects, he's a technocrat and a Mandarin. He did spend this period at the Rothschild Bank. But I don't think that's determinant in his education and formation. But he is very much of this kind of, in this technocratic mold. And he's governing without much support from France's traditional party. So one of the things that has happened in the aftermath of this event in Paris especially, mm-hmm. Is that we're hearing calls for the parliament to be dissolved from Marine Le Pen and her Le Pen's granddaughter, Marion Marshall. We're hearing it from Jean-Luc Mélenchon on the left. And we're hearing it also, I think, from the National Republicans. But what that reflects is not only their opportunism, but the fact that Macron does not really have institutional networks that allow him to talk to local leadership.
Okay.
So part of the problem we have this with this movement all across France is that there are local leaders here and there. There's no national spokesman. I think there's an effort to try and organize one. And there's no real connection between the government and the groups that are in motion here.
Mm. Well, Tony, what about that? I mean, do you think that part of the problem, I mean, obviously the people have been on the streets now this time around 3 weeks in a row, but of course it's not the first time during these at least 7 years that we've seen a lot of demonstrations on the streets. Do you think that there is a disconnect, that the people basically feel that their leaders are not representing them, as our other guests had just talked about? And what does that mean when we look in the whole scheme of things, instead of going from a centrist perspective, from Macron, are we likely to see more extremes, either right or left now, come about?
Well, I don't actually see Macron as centrist. I see him as actually quite an extreme oligarchical. I think it needs to be said. There is an international fascist elite, a fascist international. What's happened is that the in the elections in France, and also it happens here in the UK, is that there's an attempt to convolute nationalism with fascism and racism. And this is quite correct, I think, in some cases, where some of the nationalist parties do have the far right, extreme right, and some of them are deliberately infiltrated by them, as I think Marine Le Pen's Front National was in the election. And this, of course, means that there's lots of decent French people that will not vote for the Front National because they've seen it's been contaminated by the far right. We've got exactly the same going on with the UK Independence Party right now, and Nigel Farage's party. Now he's left it. We've got toxic Tommy Robinson trying to infiltrate into the UK Independence Party in order to put millions of British voters off from ever voting for it. So this is a very basic tactic, and I'm afraid that's exactly what was used in order to get Macron elected in the first place. But you're right. I mean, he is part of this elite. He's not in touch with the ordinary people whatsoever. He's one of the people who's pro the United States of Europe. He's not going to give the French people any kind of vote over whether they want to stay in the EU. He's controlled. I mean, the EU is controlled by the Commission. The Commission is failed politicians, people who've been voted out by the public. And it's run by cartels, which include, of course, the banks, the financial system, which he's worked for in the past. And also, very crucially, the mass media are also part of these cartels, for which the European Union serves. The main problem with all of this is that many of these big cartels, these massive corporations, pay virtually no tax whatsoever. And this is why the French people are angry. Now, there's two different sorts of anger. There's the ordinary anger, which will bring people out onto the streets to protest. And then what happens, of course, is a violent faction will piggyback on those protests and cause, you know, the violence that we've seen, the burning of the vehicles, that sort of thing. But then I'm afraid is what they need to do is simply the French need to address the massive problems that the French people and many other people across particularly southern Europe are having, just making ends meet. They need to make sure that people have got enough money to put food on the table and to have a reasonably decent lifestyle. And if they can't do that, then these riots are only going to continue.
Okay, well, John, tell me in your perspective, because we have some analysts basically blaming a lot of this economic pressure in France on the EU, and as you've heard Tony mention the same thing, your perspective, how much of what is going on in France is related to the EU and its economic measures?
Well, I think that Macron, as a kind of a Mandarin technocrat, reflects the neoliberal consensus that's held by many of the leaders, especially in Western Europe and Northern Europe, but, you know, most importantly, Angela Merkel. I would object somewhat to the characterization of someone like Emmanuel Macron as a fascist. I think fascists were certainly in evidence in Paris this weekend. We saw lots of people who were involved in the most violent actions, carrying flags of the symbols of the neo-nationalist movement, of something called the French Catholic movement, even monarchists, Debout la France. So there was a threat here that this kind of spontaneous mass movement with its different leaderships is the target of extreme nationalist groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, they trashed the Arc de Triomphe. They broke the statue, the head of Marion inside there. They trashed the museum on the top floor of the Arc de Triomphe. It was an attack on the symbols of Republican France. And given some of the people who were out on the forefront of the action in Paris, that's not at all surprising. In addition, another element in Paris, we've seen this in many different mass demonstrations, is that every time you have one of these kind of mass actions, whether it's the unions doing it or the National Student Organization, it attracts a lot of young people from the outer suburban belt, mm-hmm. right? Especially in the northeast of Paris, who are unemployed, who are not going anywhere in school. It's the people we call the casseurs, who will jump on a mass demonstration on the fringes mm-hmm. and either rob the participants, that's happened for a fair number of times, or take the opportunity to start breaking stores. So that's a phenomenon, I think, that's much more characteristic of what we saw in Paris. There were some skirmishes in places like Toulouse and some other places in the mairies in eastern France, but nothing on the scale of what we saw in Paris.
Okay.
Now, the connection, I think, is that this neoliberal austerity program, where we're trying to make France a magnet for investment, foreign direct investment, by foreign industries, maybe some people leaving London City, the city of London, and the financial sector there. France is trying to bring them. They're trying to bring information technology companies, say, from Silicon Valley. And what they've done is they're trying to, this move of shifting the burden of taxes more toward the center and the bottom.
Okay, stay with me, John. I got to get Tony back in on this discussion. Tony, give me your overall perspective of what John has just said, and also looking at the demonstrations itself, do you think that actually they're used more perhaps by the administration just to let everyone let some steam off, so control type, of course, although we saw them getting out of control to a certain degree, but basically allowing them to demonstrate, but at the end of the day, nothing is going to happen and no policy will be changed?
Well, I think things always do happen when so many thousands of people come out onto the streets like they have in Paris. We've also seen, of course, hundreds in Brussels as well, attacking the European Commission yesterday. So the Belgians are joining in here, and I think the focus is definitely the EU. But I ought to defend what I said about fascism. What I mean, really, is what Mussolini referred to as corporatism, that kind of fascism, where you get big cartels. Who start to finance politics. This is what happened in the run-up to the formation of the Nazi Party and takeover of the Nazi Party in Germany. Krupps and Thyssen and other massive steel cartels were financing the Nazi Party, which had helped it to rise to power. And look, the G20 is going on at the same time, isn't it? We've got the gruesome threesome over in Buenos Aires, Merkel, Macron and Theresa May, having cosy chats with Mohammed bin Salman, a mass murderer of 60,000 innocent Yemenis and 8.5 million now starving in Yemen, and the British are making, I mean, this is not just Macron, obviously the British have made at least 4.5 to 5 billion pounds from arms sales to these people. So there is an element of extreme violence, and I'm afraid that the F word, the fascism word, does have to be used about the way that these big corporations are now beginning to think that they can completely own and control our politics in Europe. And that's one of the reasons, I think, that why the British are trying, if they ever manage to get out of this arm wrench that the Europeans have put us in. The people on the streets, though, in Paris, I think, they know exactly why they're there. The French have got a very long tradition of coming out onto the streets when they're fed up with their politicians, and they know they're being conned, and they're much more politicized than many other people across the rest of Europe, who seem a little bit sort of complacent, certainly here in Britain. It takes quite a lot to get people out on the streets here.
All right. Unfortunately, we have to end it there. And of course, we're definitely keeping our eyes on France here at Press TV. I'd like to thank both my guests for being with us tonight. London investigative journalist Tony Gosling, and out of New York, professor of comparative politics, William Paterson University, John Mason. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.